vision so to escape from reality? Me, I don't need this shit. I am reality. The way it ought to be.
Apocalypse. We are we're coming at you live Sunday, May 29th. Chud, you were just telling me, and I told you to hold it for the show. You're outside putting out some gifts.
I absolutely was.
I was out there doing it at 10 a.m. this morning.
I came home. I got home at about what time is it now? It's about 4. I got home at about 2:30 and it was dark and rainy. Well, not rainy, but dark and cloudy. I'm turning this. I'm going to tip it up. I don't know if you can see well, but do you see how bright and sunny it is?
Yeah.
Out that window?
Yeah, you can see it out. You can see it out my back window too.
It was not like that just a couple hours ago.
It was pouring rain and gray this morning when I was out doing it. I put all my rain gear on, walked all around the property, made a triangle around the well house, my house, and over by the creek or the spring.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you have that natural spring.
I made a triangle between the well house. They say put one right by the house. I put one right at the foundation. Mm-hmm. I put one, buried one up by the well house, one at the spring, and then one at the creek.
Excellent. Yeah, I put one. One is right out that window that I just pointed at the foundation of our house. Then I did three triangled off from that, and then which ended up being at the edge of our garden near a telephone pole at the front of the house. And then over off to the other side of the house. And then I did another one right at my well, just 5 feet over from where my well is.
Yeah.
On the side from which the aquifer that's under there flows, if I have any understanding of it. And then did the same thing with a triangle out from there. Then I went out to what I call my sanctuary in the woods, and I put one out there.
Cool.
And a few other places that feel special. Just kind of like places we like to stop and admire the beauty.
Yeah. I went, after I did that, I took the short ones that we were instructed to just spread out along the property, especially around water. So I went across the street, went down the driveway, went across the street and banged one in into a big patch of stinging nettles right on the creek.
How are your knuckles?
I was wearing gloves and all my rain gear. So I'm good.
Good.
And then I have been getting stung profusely all day, every day for like the past 10 days. We've got a lot out here. I didn't realize it because I was here in the summer when they might have been dead or last year. Didn't notice. But yeah, and then I just went all the way up the creek past the barn, burying them. And then I put some pucks out at the meter underneath the telephone pole that has a transformer on it. I put one on the electrical stuff in the well house. And then I just spread them out in my house too.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Yeah. And now it was, it got nice. I saw the clouds clear out. It got blue. The blue was more blue than normal. It started raining again. Got nice. It was just
feel like real weather.
Yeah. 45. I think I knocked something loose. 45 minutes ago, it was extremely blustery and raining sideways. And now it's bright and beautiful and breezy.
So. All right. I got positive vibes about all of this.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's cool because Mitch told us that if we were able to do that this weekend, we would be acting in concert with people all up and down the Western United States, starting in Northern California, going all the way up to you, and then east over to Spokane.
That's great. And that is today.
He just said get it in the ground as soon as possible. Yeah.
For some reason, I thought of it last night. We were driving home kind of late last night, and I was like, oh, I think Adam suggested that today was the day to do that. Well, we'll do it tomorrow. So then Lanny told me you guys were emailing or texting and that you'd done it today. So I was like, oh, this is even better. That's great.
Yeah, she called me the F word, the three letter F word.
The three letter F word. And it's not even Pride Month yet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, she got it in
a couple days early. It's like your Christmas gift early.
We were texting back and forth, and I sent her to end off my text message. I sent the heart emoji with the Ukraine flag and just got the three letter F word in response. And then I sent her the emoji of me going like this.
Uh-huh.
And then an Israeli flag. She didn't say anything. So,
that's great.
So we're just going to do that's our intro for today, guys. You know how to get a hold of us, send us emails, and we're looking for some donations as well. So you can find all the info to donate to the show in the show notes, and hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, or email us at deborahgetsredpilled@protonmail.com. Oh, and I don't know if you heard on, I think, our last episode that we dropped, the outro song was a song called Your Government Loves You. And it was sent to me by, I forget the guy's name. I don't have it right now. His band is called William Wallace Protest Songs. And he said they've got a YouTube channel with four songs. They're all pretty good, and they have really awesome videos. You should go watch them.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. So that's at the end of the, what is the last one? Is that Sean McCann?
Yes. It's at the end of the Sean McCann one. And it's a cool song. It's a punk rock song that I actually enjoy. And then, but if you go and watch it with the video, it makes it way better. And he gave us free reign to use all his music. So thanks, man.
Hey, right on. Thanks,
dude. I'll put that channel in the show notes today. So, but yeah, Deborah gets redpilled at protonmail.com. Hit us up. And I hope you enjoy what we've got coming on. So let's pause and we will be right back. Okay, guys, we're back, and we are here once again with returning champion. He is the citizen journalist voice of Missoula, Montana, Travis Mateer, a.k.a. William Skink. Are you there?
Oh, I am here. And how do I sound? Because this microphone that I'm pretending to speak into, it's not actually working. I had to default to my system, my computer microphone. So am I coming in okay?
You're coming in fine. Fantastic. You sound
just fine.
Excellent, excellent. My podcasting has been had to put on the back burner right now. So this microphone is just for looks.
Okay,
cool. Well, it looks really good too. You sound fine, and the microphone looks awesome.
Yes. So where should I start, guys? Do you have any initial questions since last we spoke?
Well, maybe we should give everybody that hasn't heard you before a little intro on who you are, how we know each other, all that.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Travis Mateer, and I've been living in Missoula, Montana since 2000, so 22 years now. And I've been listening to Deborah Gets Redpilled for quite a bit. Not originally. I don't go all the way back, but man, I really liked to listen to a little bit of sanity and an honest conversation happening with a kind of boomer mom that I can identify with and having some of those conversations. So I just really gravitated towards some of that early content that you were putting out, Adam. And then I reached out because you came through Missoula, Montana, and I'm a synchromystic, self-identified. And I thought maybe it'd be interesting to follow up on some of the stuff you experienced in Missoula, Montana, which was a tampon underneath a sheet in a nasty motel room.
Motel 6. Yeah.
Motel 6.
Right by the University of Montana campus, correct?
Yep, absolutely. And I almost got arrested because the woman didn't appreciate me asking questions about that. And so I actually had to leave because she was in the process of calling 911. But an EMT guy I know told me that particular motel interacted with the homeless complex here in Missoula. So I actually learned information because you came through Montana and I decided to follow up on it synchronistically doing detective work, which now gets me in more and more trouble these days.
Yeah, that was not what I expected. You can't really expect to find a great experience at Motel 6. We decided to stay there because we just wanted to we'd been camping, in all these different places throughout Montana and Idaho and Eastern Oregon. And we just needed a shower and some TV and a reset, And so we stayed there and we found out very quickly that it was a homeless motel. And yeah, I talked a little bit with you, I think through emails at that time. And I didn't realize the homeless problem that was occurring in Missoula. But I think it's safe to say now that it's any place that there's any concentration of population, even in these little towns in the Pacific Northwest, they're all getting it. Chud's getting it in Bellingham. It's in Spokane. It's everywhere. So
it's so fascinating because when I was on Sam Tripoli's Tinfoil Hat, really awesome experience to get a chance to kind of talk about some of my experiences with people on the streets and, meth tweakers and TIs and all kinds of crazy shit. But, some of the stuff that's happening now, the homeless camps out at Reserve Street, which is one of our main streets through town, connects to the Interstate 90. That homeless encampment has gotten so out of control. And one of the guys, Kevin Davis, who I've been working with as an organizer, he's a business owner and he's been very persistent in leading volunteer-led cleanups, despite the fact that the influencers behind the scenes keep on trying to undermine him. They don't like the pictures that we take. It makes people feel sad or something. We're stigmatizing the population.
Yeah.
Well, I was going out there on the second, it was actually the Earth Day cleanup, and I was taking footage that I've since posted with a second story treehouse that was burned out. And then I took footage of all the walkie talkies I was finding. And I'm like, all these victims of mental illness out here couldn't be having an organized criminal element, with walkie talkies and vantage points and treehouses and monitoring traffic going to the interstate. I mean, it's just, there's so much insane stuff. And one of the things that I've really exposed myself to now is corruption at the Missoula County Sheriff's Department. If you don't have your sheriff in the county where you are currently living, you are in some trouble. And I am now really trying to let people in Missoula, Montana know they are in trouble. I'm literally writing blog posts welcoming human traffickers to Montana because in some ways I'm living in an Ozarks episode, that Netflix show, where a cartel moves into Missouri. It's getting so fucking insane in this town. And it's mind-boggling, really.
Do you see the homeless population really start to ramp up coming out of the winter months and into the spring and summer?
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you a really fun story. Let's get into some fun homeless stories, right? Because I was a service provider for 7 years, well, 10 if you include Missoula Aging Services. And so I can't be smeared in the same way as other people can. But there's there's a distinction, a lot of subpopulations within the general homeless population, right? And so transients really are a seasonal phenomenon. Sometimes they're associated with the rainbow kids. I'm sure you guys in the Pacific Northwest are familiar with rainbow family. And if the rainbow gathering is in the vicinity, you see a higher density of the drainbows is a term I like.
Drainbows, that's a good one. I never heard that one.
Oh yeah, no, that's a fun one. So the drainbows, 2013 was a summer that I lost my shit with the drainbows, and I was starting to give lectures about the concept of trash cans, and the idea is that when you generate trash, we have trash cans throughout downtown. It's like you place them in those trash cans.
Whoa, slow down, hold on. So there's a trash can. And where does the trash go?
I slowed it down for them in a very, very condescending way because I was at the edge of just losing it because it was just, I knew that the seasonal transients come through, cause all kinds of hell, and then they leave. And then the year-round people that die on the streets in the winter, they get impacted by the actual consequences of the seasonal transients. But out at Reserve Street, one of my favorite guys, I'll call him A, that's the letter of his first name. I've known A for a while, and A is an attractant when he is left to persist. So I know A, he's not a behavior issue. He's a veteran, has a disability check. But he really now thinks he belongs under the bridge. And the fires they use in the winter to stay warm really does cause potential infrastructure problems on one of the busiest roads in Missoula, Montana, right? That has to get shut down when there's EMTs having to respond to medical situations out at the camps. So A had his disability check, was suspended for like a year and a half, which meant it was piling up. And so I was really hoping he was going to get a bank account opened up and then a payee, someone that could legally help him manage his money so that when what happened happened, you know, so I'm trying to avoid this like disaster that I was anticipating. He got $7,000 in his account. He bought an ATV. He bought a four-wheeler. All right. He crashed it. He crashed the four-wheeler in the river and in the first week. And then he pulled it out eventually somehow through crazy, probably meth imagination. I don't know what the hell they do out there sometimes, but pulled out the four-wheeler. He got it back to the dealership and they gave him like $86, I think. It's what he told me. But at that point, I stopped being like the nice former service provider. I'm like, hey, A, the fuck, man? You think you're going to like live out here forever? That could have gotten you housing. He's like, I belong here. And I mean, he's got like a hoarding outside. Like, I mean, it's just, it's awful. But even though he's not a behavior issue necessarily, the seasonal transient younger people, they come through and like, oh, it's cool, we can hang out here. So he's got a bunch of like little street kids that hangs out with them. And they actually are building pallets in the bridge. Underneath the bridge, there's pallets so that they can have like mattresses and they can sleep up in there.
Yeah. So it's like a multi-story pallet stein.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And now with like four or five cleanups that have finally happened, even though there was behind the scene efforts to stop us from cleaning up homeless trash, I don't know why, but apparently liberals in Missoula, Montana suspend their love for the environment because love for victimizing meth heads is I don't know. It's fucked up, but
yeah, I see that here in crunchy green Portland, Oregon as well. You know,
same up here in Bellingham, you know, it's like they care so much about so many things, but yeah, they don't mind. They don't mind homeless garbage in
67 tons. We have cleaned up 67 tons, but the reason is because the county commissioners were so shamed into passing an emergency order. And so they actually were able to bring in heavy equipment because we were just handpicking stuff and that takes, you know, forever. And so they actually are now, Missoula, Montana, from a legal standpoint, is pushing back in some ways against the Ninth Circuit court decision where all of these localities are saying, we can't do anything. We can't. It's because of the Ninth Circuit court decision that basically says any community has to have housing or like shelter capacity. And if you don't, then you can't make public camping illegal. And so that's now been the justification in Missoula for throwing all kinds of money at congregate shelters and outdoor encampments and all this stuff. And private security is now getting paid money to manage the encampments, the official ones that are outdoors. I mean, it's getting bonkers out here.
Is that law that passed originally in Boise?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, so there was, it was a woman who was camping illegally and her charge was, has been taken up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court, I think recent, maybe within the last 6 months or a year, they chose not to hear it. And so it reverts back to the Ninth Circuit court decision. So there's a lot of uncertainty. But in Missoula, the sheriff's department, there's all kinds of actual crimes that they could be enforcing. But when you have this weird, non-enforcement, and really I've started understanding, I wrote a blog post called the Power of Things Not Happening, because there's a whole arena that's very hard to nail down of power and how it flexes, and it's about how things don't happen. I mean, time can destroy evidence, people cannot be charged, things just don't happen, and you're like, huh, that's interesting.
Do you guys have one of these like Soros funded DAs like in San Francisco or Portland where they just catch and release,
right?
One side, not the other.
Kirsten Pabst, I mean, we have an amazing county attorney who loves defending herself some University of Montana rapists. So she was a main character in John Krakauer's book about Missoula and the rape scandal. She's still in power.
What's
and
that so, book called? I never read that one.
So it's called Missoula Raping Something, and let's see, where is it? I have it in my collection somewhere. I could go grab it. It's really fascinating. It's about the University of Montana. There's a couple cases specifically, and it just focuses actually on the city and the university. And
oh wow, is it a recent book? I've read Under the Banner of Heaven. I read Into the Wild, and then I read the one about K2 or whatever.
Yeah, it was 2012, 2013, I think, and it was actually part of a Department of Justice investigation. But I know some people involved in implementing the requirements that were part of the agreement that the city and the university made. So there was additional training for law enforcement. But one of the things I've come to understand is the sheriff's department was not a part of that initial investigation. Like, one of the ways that power also flexes is playing jurisdictional bullshit games, right? So a city case can be kicked out to the county sometimes. I actually had that done to me when I was trying to hold a state representative accountable for sneaking into a church and illegally filming inside the church. But they didn't want to press charges on him. Crazy stuff in Zoomtown, but it's really fascinating. The jurisdictional stuff that can happen in the sheriff's department. Now, there's a missing person case. Rebecca Barsotti is a 33-year-old woman that went missing last July, and a body has been, showed up on the river, like placed, according to Sheriff Deputy Ryan Funk from Mineral County, placed, by the Clark Fork River. And it's been 10 days. The body has not been identified yet. Like, there is such insane stuff starting to go on with not just that case, but to go back, let me, so synchronicity stuff. We talked, I think, a little bit about Sean Stevenson, right? The homeless man that was beaten at the Pavarella Center.
Yes.
Yep. Right. And then he was taken to St. Pat's and removed from life support on January 5th, 2020. So,
and his alleged murderer was a black guy from Oakland.
Yes.
Who was shot by sheriff's deputies or police?
Sheriff deputies. So okay. Yes. Excellent memory. And I have since, in the past 2 months, I sat in on the coroner's inquest regarding the shooting death of Johnny Lee Perry. And oh my goodness, it really blew me away, because I wrote a real cynical, sarcastic post about basically the title was something like, if I wanted to kill Johnny Lee Perry, here's how I would set up his state sanctioned execution. Right. The circumstances are so mind boggling. And this kind of goes into the TI topic that I got into with Dean. With the Up Is Down podcast, which is his work on targeted individuals, fascinating. But
yeah.
I don't want to ramble and get too ahead of myself. Johnny Lee Perry was accused of assaulting Sean Stevenson inside the Pavarella Center on January 3rd, 2020, right?
And that's a homeless shelter.
It's the homeless shelter, yep, on West Broadway here in town. And I worked at that shelter from 2008 to 2016. So it used to be in downtown Missoula, and then it moved to West Broadway. And so
is that more outside of town or still? Yep.
Okay. It's a little bit outside of the downtown core. And so the downtown businesses back then were able to push the PAV outside. The PAV is sort of the nickname. And so January 3rd is also the day that I put in my notice to leave Missoula Aging Services, the nonprofit sector where I worked. And then January 3rd also is the date that our mayor, John Engen, first took power in 2006 or 2007, right? So that's kind of these Sean, John, and myself, you know, and January 3rd is the synchronicity that I'm starting to have more and more context build up as time goes by. It's kind of like my Philip K. Dick, you know, to compare myself to amazing science fiction writer. but the stuff that started to happen with Johnny when I talked to him the first time in person last April. And so this was back when my podcast host was still with me and we were still making podcast episodes. And after I talked to Johnny, it was a pretty good conversation. He told me he was a TI and then I would be next. I didn't like hearing that. Freaked me out.
But and this was before the murder.
Yep. Sean had been beaten and died on the January 3rd, 2020. And I ran into Johnny on April, I think it was 18th or something, 2021. So a lot of time had gone by. But when I was talking to Johnny and he was telling me he was a TI and we had this conversation, you know, it wasn't too negative of a conversation. And I went and immediately documented my interaction with Tim. And I was talking about this book I had since lost and couldn't find about TIs, and all this kind of stuff was swirling around. And this was actually the day that I talked to Johnny in April was the same day that our mayor, John Engen, announced his run for his fifth term. And so there was that sort of in the background as well. Then you go to, I think it was August 9th, 2021, is when I saw Johnny on West Broadway, so by the Pavarello Center, with his hands in the air, shirtless, you know, it's summer, it's hot. And I stop my car and get my camera or get my phone and start filming him. And so Johnny starts saying stuff like, you know, I'm the new CIA, I'm the government, I can kill at will. He's making threats towards law enforcement. And he also, I asked him about Sean Stevenson, and he essentially, I'm like, hey, I talked to some people on the street, Johnny, and they say that you did strangle Sean. And he was like, yeah, I did. Well, you know, what are you going to do about it? Was his response to me. And so, you know, I called 911, talked to law enforcement eventually, debated about whether or not to put that footage out. I ended up putting a shorter version of the footage out after talking to Sean's sisters, and they had some concern. They were like, hey, Johnny B might get shot, you know, by law enforcement. 13 days after I put the footage out, Johnny B is shot twice in the back by sheriff deputies, out on the South Side Road, west of Missoula, really in the middle of nowhere. Right. And
is it a place he could have walked to by himself?
Excellent, excellent question. Because when I sat in the coroner's inquest, the dog that didn't bark is how the fuck did this homeless guy who had his car impounded around the time that I actually video recorded his behavior, how did he get out to this meth like trailer, you know, place out west of town, right? Because the craziest shit that I learned by sitting through that inquest is that the way that the sheriff deputies got out there is because Johnny Lee Perry was out there with a guy named Jackie Maxville, this con artist guy that's like currently in jail. And there's two other people out at this homeless encampment. And I talked to the young woman that was out there and was really worried about basically what she knew. And so what happened, apparently, according to this Jackie Maxville, is that Johnny had a machete. I think maybe it was Jackie's or Jack. It was Jack's machete. And they gave it to Johnny probably around the time they were consuming some meth. I mean, they said they were just high on weed, but there was some probable meth use, I would assume, but maybe that's just a wrong assumption. But Jack didn't want to call 911 directly. Jack calls his daughter, and his daughter calls 911. And sheriff deputies come out. This is, August 29th. I'm not sure if it was a Sunday. I think it was a weekend. But the sheriff deputies come out. These guys are supposed to be trained in crisis intervention training, right? Which means they can de-escalate people in a mental health crisis. But they park a long ways away because they testify. The sheriff deputy, I think, what was his name? Justin White? Something White. I know his last name is White because it was kind of funny. Because there's young black guys playing with a machete. Here's a bunch of guys with guns. They're like 50 yards away using a amplification to say, put the knife down, Johnny, put the knife down, put the knife down. Right. After 39 minutes, they get bored. They set up this, like, you know, basically they were going to use 30 millimeter non-lethal initially to try and stun him. And then if that didn't work, I guess, you know, if he passed some line and tried to go to one of the trailers, in the sheriff deputy's minds, they're scared that there's, like, you know, dozens of like meth people with guns hiding in all these like trailers. There's like one or two structures, right? And so they kind of move in, from my recollection of watching the camera, the body cam, and Johnny goes towards the trailer. The four shots from the non-lethal were shot at him. I think three hit him, pisses him off, doesn't stun him, you know, pisses him off. And he runs in the other direction, and a sheriff deputy shoots him twice in the back. And then he bleeds out. And so I sat in the courtroom and watched him die on camera, as about a half dozen or like a dozen sheriff people are sitting there in the courtroom, like menacingly looking at the county attorney that was doing his half-assed job of asking questions. I mean, no one ever asked the question, how did Johnny get out there? Was it Jack's car that took him out there? No one ever asked that question. They just took this guy's word for it, that Johnny was a dangerous, scary guy making threats with his machete. I mean, I watched the video footage. He was playing with the machete. He was just walking around swinging it like he was like Highlander in his mind or something. I mean, it was just, yeah. It was insane. And
there can be only one, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Johnny is not the one anymore. He was flown, I think, to St. Pat's where Sean Stevenson was euthanized. And now he's dead. And any questions that could be answered from what Johnny knows about his alleged role in assaulting Sean Stevenson, because I actually don't think Johnny was primarily responsible for doing the physical damage to Sean Stevenson. I think Johnny was kind of a patsy for something else that happened. But maybe I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist talking to other crazy conspiracy theorists about conspiracy theories. I don't know.
Well, that's probably true, but
that's quite a story, though.
Just because it's a conspiracy doesn't mean it's not true.
Exactly. But it's wild. It's wild stuff.
So, have you come up with any motive? If he actually did the murder, he's a TI. Maybe he's, you know, contracted to do the murder or forced to do the murder or something like that. Why are they? Why is the death of this one homeless guy so significant?
So some of the stuff that I've since learned about Johnny, because there was this weird like half-assed article from a guy named Donnie Rose, and this was from North Star, something that Sean King, some blog, and it was a complete trash article. They actually thought that Sean's family may have sent someone to assassinate Johnny, or it was kind of ridiculous. But Johnny Lee Perry apparently spent some time living in St. Regis, west of Montana. For a black man to live outside of the Missoula bubble, it's not maybe the safest thing. And Johnny, according to some social media posts, had a girlfriend, and he was making claims his girlfriend's dad was CIA or former CIA. Maybe that's just him being crazy, methed out, you know, schizo, right? But that's always a cover or a convenient cover story if something that actually might be happening. But when I start looking into this missing person case, this Rebecca Barsotti missing person case, like she was living in Superior, Montana, which is very close to St. Regis, excuse me. And there has since been, there is some stuff going on, guys, with people that have their own profile at the Southern Poverty Law Center and possible connections with the McVeigh family. That I'm not even going to get explicit about because it's like that fucking weird. But the stuff that's like going on, I think that's connected to this is pretty fucking crazy. And so Johnny, when I think about what happened to Sean on January 3rd, 2020, I think about the stuff the family told me about what happened December 2019 and something that happened at Silver Park here in Missoula, Montana. In an actual police report where Sean was one of the names as a informational informant, or I can't remember the exact term, but Sean and two or three other people, two people, including Sean, are dead from that police report. And so there was some speculation that I would make based on all the stuff that I know and some of the images that I've seen about what physically happened to Sean. It is almost like there was some kind of real like coordinated hit on Sean that was run by almost like run by law enforcement. I mean, it seems like from what the family has told me, Sean was assaulted in the men's dorm in the Pavarello Center. The men's dorm has no cameras. The police absolutely controlled the scene because around that time, the Pavarello Center was a wet shelter environment, meaning people could actively use drugs and alcohol. I have one of my contacts is a fire department guy who was pretty high up at the time and has since retired. But he told me part of the arguments that were happening is that the captains can usually send their fire guys into a dangerous situation based on their own discretion. But the fire chief for the entire, all the different fire departments pulled that discretion back when it came to the Pavarello Center because it was so high risk to send the fire and the EMTs in that they now deferred to law enforcement. So law enforcement controlled the scene. It took, I think, 8 minutes after the 911 calls for them to actually get to the men's dorm, which is in the basement, to actually start working on Sean. And according to the body cam footage that I haven't seen directly, but I have every faith that the family tells me really solid information. There was a real strange emphasis from law enforcement asking for EMT's contact names and information, but not asking that same type of information for the witnesses standing around, right? Why would you not want information about potential witnesses, but you want information from the EMTs, like, what's your name? I mean, this is apparently, according to what the family has told me, they aggressively information that was being asked. Other questions the family would ask if they were being interviewed, they would say, like, why was the police photographer told to not take pictures in the bathroom? Those kind of questions. Why was Johnny, according to footage from the Pavarillo Center earlier in the day, seemingly so fucked up he could barely walk? Is this the guy that got behind a really big, strong black man like Sean was and strangled him unconscious? And then you start thinking, if you're thinking about why the EMTs were such an important part in my theorizing, right? The EMTs were not a part of this like coordinated thing. And so they were not a controlled, they were a variable, right? And so they did their job actually really well, which apparently, according to what happened in Texas, law enforcement doesn't want to do their job sometimes, but they did their job. They revived Sean. Sean was revived. He was in St. Pat's in a coma. And then he was removed from life support on January 5th. And so it's really interesting. The whole idea that that EMTs would be getting their contact information asked for seems weird, but I followed up on that. The EMT contact that actually told me about the Motel 6, Adam, he mentioned that he had two experiences where the cops asked him aggressively for his information. And one was I think attempted suicide in the university housing, and the other was a mental health crisis in a crisis facility. Both those are potentially controversial or scandalous if get out in the media. And so my idea is, if you're looking at an OPSEC, operational security kind of, approach of keeping information controlled, I think their law enforcement is very, they're very invested now in narrative control. And so this is something they are actively pursuing. And any leaks that information might get out into the media is being, at least in Missoula, Montana, from my perspective, that is something they're very interested in identifying. And so it's, again, there's a lot of stuff that's happening here, and I'm a blogger writing about it. Conventional, traditional media has been so hollowed out, and our independent journalists like that, the Missoula Independent was shuttered in 2018. And so there's just a tremendous lack of scrutiny when it comes to the stuff that's happening. I need to take a breath, man. I talked for like caffeine.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're blogging about all this to keep it, especially, it's like you say, it's like, if no one else is reporting on this kind of stuff, it's going to take someone who's just boots on the ground, who's actually paying attention. You have the mind for this. I don't know. I kind of want to say you entrench yourself in the culture, but I don't mean to say that you're necessarily a part of that culture, but you get down and dirty with it so that you can, you can see it for real, which is, that's absolutely integral for people to understand what's going on in not just Missoula, but in every town America. And that's not happening very much.
I know. I wish it was happening more. And that's kind of part of my frustration with the synchronistic drama that I sent you that email. Because I'm trying to get attention with this stuff. And I've been on Sam Tripoli's tinfoil hat. And so I thought it would be an easy ask to be like, hey, I want to be on Zero, and talk about some of this stuff. And to get rejected and kind of shot down, and I won't go into names, but, people know probably who I'm referring to when you talk about who does the booking for Sam Tripoli. But then I also had Christopher Knowles, who I really respect. I still will look at his content. I think he's amazing, but he's doing some of the most interesting synchronistic work that actually directly ties into the biggest synchronicity I can possibly imagine, that I'm trying to kind of like help tease so that the family can actually get attention. And I won't even say what family, because I'm going to try and be kind of cagey in some of the ways I'm talking about this. But I reached out to Christopher Knowles because I was a Patreon supporter of Christopher Knowles and his Secret Sun blog, which is phenomenal. I encourage people to go check it out. I'm trying not to get too butthurt, but to be told that I can't even get a phone call from him because I'm not a high enough tier supporter, I'm just like, okay. Also, I asked him probably 3 or 4 times for an interview. He was like the one synchromistic I wanted to interview that I never got a chance to. And I still would love to, but at this point, I'm just kind of like, well, all right. I want to call him Ofer Knowles. And I spell Knowles now with N-O. Because he said no to the good news. He said no to the good news. And I have so much good news to spread, really. Scary shit sometimes. But there's really amazing stuff that's happening that I think people can open their minds and hearts to. And you guys have been having some of these more Christian-oriented people on. And that's that's one thing I wanted to get into, because I've been like praying and seeing miracles all over the place, and it's very weird. I'm not very comfortable with that necessarily, but it's been, I've been praying and seeing the results in such a direct correlative way that I'm like, okay, God, this is all right.
Yeah, I went to Orthodox Church last night.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah,
for the first time.
Yeah, how was that, Adam?
It was pretty cool, man. It's like, if you didn't know you're going to, I don't know what the hell was going on. It's like chanting.
Is it Latin? Is it Latin that's
no, or... it's English and a little Russian.
Oh yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of chanting, a lot of really, the aesthetics fucking awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of incense and beards and all sorts of crazy stuff. And so we went to, I forget what they called it, it's like a Saturday night prayer service. It wasn't the full mass. So it's weird. They consider Saturday night, like the start of the day or the week. And then they start there. And then that prayer service is to like prep you to wake up Sunday morning and go to the big long mass.
Yeah. Cool.
But and Emily went with you.
Emily went with me.
And they were cool with that.
Yeah, they let she didn't burst into flames when she crossed the threshold. I sent a message to the priest, you know, I emailed him and just was like, I'd like to come check it out. I want to be as respectful as possible. I don't know anything about your traditions. And he's like, yeah, just come and hang out. And I really wanted to send him another one being like, my wife is ethnically Jewish. Would she be allowed to come with me just to see what kind of email I'd get back? But yeah, she was fine. And then Buck Johnson hooked me up with his friend Gabe and met up with him there. And then we went, him and his awesome girlfriend.
Is this Gabe's church that you went to then?
No, he goes to the one in Milwaukee, Oregon, which is pretty close to where I used to live. And it's a much larger congregation and like well-known. So I'm going to go to mass there, I think maybe next week or the week after. So, it was really neat. And, I'm glad you're open to our Christian episodes. I know most people are enjoying them. And I know when we first started doing it, it really weirded some people out. And then like, even just the titles of the shows, the loyal listeners were like, I guess I'll listen. And then we're like really, really impressed with it. But I've got a cool synchro about
yes!
that deals with it. I wanted to run it past you. I ran it past Midnight Mike because from OBDM. So on the most recent OBDM, did you guys listen to it by any chance?
I don't think, no.
Yesterday's?
Yesterday's.
No, not yet.
So they started off with Midnight Mike. He's like an old punk rocker, kind of like metalhead dude. And NPR just did this big takedown, like cancellation article about this guy, Matt Pike, who was an original member of Sleep and High on Fire.
Huh.
And those are two like pretty famous underground metal bands. This guy's the real deal. He's like been a rocker forever. You know, I've seen pictures of him like in like sixth grade with like feathered hair and like a Iron Maiden shirt, like the real deal. And he lived in Oakland when I lived there. And I would see this guy out at the bar and he's got some substance abuse problems. Like he has had some bad health problems from it. I didn't know the guy, but you know, he was kind of like underground famous in Oakland. So would probably get like people giving him drugs and alcohol a lot, you know, but at the point when I was still going to the bars a lot, I would like see him out and like, it'd be like a month between, I'd just catch him at like some bar. Didn't know him once again, but knew who he was. Everybody knew who he was. And you could see like his physical deterioration happening from drugs and alcohol. But what I didn't know about him is he's like one of us. He's like a conspiracy guy. He's like super into aliens. And I guess he's doing solo. He lives in Portland now. I didn't know that either. And he's came out with a solo album and he's got like a whole bunch of stuff. Like David Icke stuff in it, like Lizard People and all this stuff like that. And of course, to anybody else who's not like us, the word David Icke means anti-Semite. Lizard people is obviously about the Jews, is what they're going to say. When David Icke's never said anything like that.
Right.
The woman who wrote A Color, what's the movie with Oprah Winfrey, A Color?
I think it is The Color Purple.
Color Purple. Mm-hmm. Her name is Alice Watkins. Is that her name?
Walker.
Alice Walker. She was getting interviewed. This is a tangent, but she was getting interviewed by like NPR, like Terry Gross or something, a long time ago. And they're like, what book, you know, has been like the biggest book to help you with spiritual growth, you know, throughout recent times? And she's like, Human Race. She's a Black lady. And she goes, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees by David Icke. And like, just
scrambled circuits. Yeah. That blows minds.
Yeah. Yeah. And, they're like friends, and they consider themselves like spiritual soulmates. They like awesome. Go and like hang out with each other. If you watch the David Icke video that's on YouTube, there's a like kind of a, it's not the best movie, but it's like an hour and a half long documentary about him. She's in it. But so anyway, yeah, he does all sorts of, he's really into cryptids. He's really into, back to Matt Pike, he's really into cryptids, and so and all this David Icke stuff. So NPR does this big takedown, like cancellation article about him being an anti-Semite and like, you know, believing that 9/11 was, you know, a false flag and all this stuff. So we've got that. Midnight Mike and OBDM talked about that. You can go listen to them talk about it. An original member of Sleep and High on Fire is this guy, the guy Buck told us about, Justin Marlar. He's from Chico, California, where I went to college and spent a lot of time. He became Orthodox and ultimately followed it all the way to becoming a monk at this famous rural Northern California monastery.
Interesting.
NPR, coincidentally, just did a giant hit piece on Orthodoxy and like how it's attracting members of the alt-right and white nationalists and stuff. So I thought there was like a cool, well, not cool, but like a definite synchronistic overlap there.
Interesting.
Definitely notable. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what that makes me think of, to go back to why I think Christopher Knowles didn't want to talk to me. When you're talking about Northern California and like, you know, being a monk or something, I immediately started thinking of Esalen or the Esalen Institute. That was in Northern California, wasn't it?
What?
Or is?
It sounds familiar. What is it?
So, I mean, it's kind of like, if you think of True Detective season two,
I couldn't do it. I couldn't get past the first episode.
I correlate a lot of stuff to fiction since so much seems to be bleeding out of fiction and into my life in ways that I can't control. But there's an Esalen Institute kind of like new agey scene or character in that series of True Detective. But the actual Esalen Institute and Christopher Knowles has a tie or like enjoys the work of Jeffrey Kripal, like K-R-I-P-A-L. There's this book, let me grab it, Mutants and Mystics, right? And so one of the things, and maybe this is kind of fun to talk about, this is perfect. So, because Stranger Things came out and I went to church today and talked to the church my parents go to. And I talked to the pastor because he was like his sermon, I explained to him what's going on briefly, and I'll get to that part. But
Esalen Institute, I just looked it up, is in Big Sur. So that's south of San Francisco by a couple hours on the 101.
Oh, okay, that's right. Big Sur, but that's right.
This monastery is like way up in Northern California, in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, good to know. Big Sur. So Esalen and the people that are drawn to talk about it, Jeffrey Kripal, and I think what's happening in this broader sense culturally with all the superhero movies and with Stranger Things. My opinion is that there is this effort in like a PR way to sort of like take the MKUltra stuff that was going on, you know, the paperclip Nazi scientists and all that crazy shit, breaking kids' minds, making disassociative states of mind for these kids that are being traumatized, parts of those states of mind are regressive. You know, they go and they're young to kind of protect the innocent part of their brains. And then part of their mind, so the story goes, evolve superhuman powers, right? So that the Montauk experiments make a great show that the kids are all watching now, Stranger Things.
New season's about to come out.
It just broke, and my kids watched five episodes last night.
If I ever finished the second season. Maybe I'll go finish the second season and watch the third one.
I do all this as research. I'm researching how kids are being groomed at a sort of meta narrative level in a lot of ways. And then I share the stuff with them and they think I'm some crazy church lady sounding person, but I'm their dad and they have to listen to me. But I really am suspicious now of this superhero narrative that like seems to sort of go back and justify or rationalize all this terrible stuff that was being done, you know? But it seems to be the excuse is, well, look at you guys have some superhuman powers. Isn't that cool? And I don't know if mentioning that to Christopher Knowles when I was trying to get an interview with him, and I mentioned talking to Jason Horsley, who's another synchromistic that's really interesting, but he kind of went this other way of just pulling away from pop culture because it's gotten so just, you know, nasty. And so it's interesting to think about the cultural trends that are starting to happen. And the superhero movies that are just being, you know, so much money being put into that kind of stuff. It's very, very interesting stuff that gets me thinking a little bit differently about these movies and what might be happening.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You mentioned like I always call them the Marvel movies because it drives people nuts. They think I don't realize I'm mispronouncing it. I often bring up on here that I work with like a lot of 20-year-old males, and they all watch those movies like borderline religiously. I don't think they're religious about anything, but like those movies are, I mean, they're almost like sacred to them. When they hear me say, a Marvel movie, it's like they have to correct me. And I don't know. It's kind of amazing when it comes down to it. I've never seen a Marvel movie. I've never watched any of them. I was never really a comic book guy. Yeah. So like the movies, like, but you know, and on the other hand, I'm into cult horror, obscure B movies and stuff like that. So while I've never seen a single Marvel movie, I've watched the Wood Chipper Massacre, of course, you know, all these other things. But yeah, it is amazing. I mean, they drop references to each other about these movies just constantly. It's absolutely ingrained in them. And when, you know, I never tell them that I haven't seen any, because I don't think they could swallow that. They wouldn't believe it. They know that they could only believe it if I was the guy who said, I don't watch movies or TV.
Adam, are you a big fan of the Marvel or the whole canon of superhero stuff or?
No, I'm not. I had to step away for a second to let my dog out, but I came back, and when Chud's talking about this, I know exactly he's talking about the people that he works with, right?
Yeah.
what kicked off the Marvel universe? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, what was some of the early ones? I mean, X-Men, I think, was...
I don't mind the original X-Men. I've seen that when there wasn't like a new one out every 2 weeks, you know, and it was still kind of a big deal. I mean, I think I'm not like a huge superhero fan. I didn't like the new reboots of the Batmans. I liked the Joker. I don't know if that counts. Spider-Man was okay, but then all these like mashups where they're all together and like Thor and all this, I never got into any of that stuff.
Is Guardians of the Galaxy, is that the Marvel stuff?
I saw that one in the theaters, and I enjoyed it. I was like injured and like I was on disability, and I just went and saw it in downtown Oakland for a matinee one day because I was bored. It was pretty good. Green chick's pretty hot.
Absolutely. The Watchmen is actually really interesting. I had a lot of synchronicities with Sean Stevenson's sister surrounding the Watchmen series. And it actually plays into the fact I walked out of a movie last week. I don't think I've ever really done that, maybe once. But I walked out of Everything Everywhere All at Once which is really interesting. And the way that I kind of correlate that with The Watchmen, I don't know if you guys have seen The Watchmen, it's based on, is it Grant Morrison's graphic novels? I think it's Grant Morrison.
I've seen the movie. I didn't watch the series.
Yeah, the series is really interesting. And Grant Morrison's amazing. I'm not a graphic novel fan, but I finally read The Invisibles, and The Invisibles is, I think that's what it's called, The Invisibles. It's really, it's crazy. It's but the Watchmen has a small aspect of the series is back in the 70s, like Black folks are being sort of tested in some of these cities with technology that in the theater drives them crazy and makes them do like mass slaughter, right? And, you know, it's kind of like that mind control frequency technology kind of stuff that, you know, makes the circles and conspiracy podcasts. But when I was watching Everything Everywhere All at Once, the way that it was so disassociative and sort of schizo, and it didn't allow, I mean, the first couple of minutes is just uncomfortable because it's just like you don't feel comfortable. And the way that they split her into like other timelines, and then she goes and she gets abilities from those other timelines and comes back. You're not allowed to sit with actual human emotions. The music and different the way they shoot things with the camera, it undermines any actual sitting with a human emotion. I mean, it's just I didn't like it at all, and it made me feel. I walked out. It's very strange. Not a movie recommendation coming from me on that one, but I do continue to see pop culture and some of this mass media as a necessary area of research. But one of the ways that a synchromystic like Jason Horsley deviates from some of the people that just want to sit there and watch all the symbolism, you know, in the movies is if you're actually following the synchronicities in your real life, like on the ground, it's a different ballgame. There's more risk involved in that. There's more challenges to your own personal inner development. There's just a lot more when you're actually doing it in the way that explores your actual environment, your lived environment, instead of the mediated environment, where you might find a lot of synchronicities, but where are those actually taking you? Are you still sitting your ass in front of a screen, looking for more synchronicities for the next movie? Cause that seems like bullshit, but.
Well, what's the next move if you're being proactive once you start seeing these synchros to what do you do then?
That's an excellent, excellent question. And it's obviously a synchronicity is a meaningful coincidence. And so, you know, people just have to really be open to it and then find ways to maybe act on it. Or, you know, for me, not drinking really came from a synchronicity with a Lego. I think I told you guys the Lego story. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think it's how you actualize the things that might be going on in your head, because the power of our own consciousness and the ways that we're actually, you know, co-creating this reality, and the way that time has been hijacked. Time is such a weird thing for me right now, in so many ways, but, I think that might go back to the Babylon workings and Aleister Crowley and all that fun stuff.
Do you guys think what you guys have kids? I've heard people with kids talk about time speeding up recently. How do you guys feel about it? Does time seem faster?
Chad, you can answer that because my time thing is weird.
Yeah, mine's weird too. I for a long time have felt that time speeds up and then slows down and then speeds up again and at random intervals.
There's no rhyme or reason to what you've found.
Like, you know, 2020 is a really good example where in like April or May of 2020, I felt like we'd been in COVID for 6-7 months, even though, you know, it wasn't nearly that long. At best, like February, because I was paying attention to Event 201 and things like that, like maybe a month before anybody else. But like, I mean, if you'd asked me, like by the time, the BLM riots and stuff were happening, I felt we had been in COVID forever. I mean, it felt like a year. I mean, I felt like it had been so long. But then at the same time, and literally that same amount of time, like I would have like weeks slip by that would like, it would feel like time was going fast, but then I'd look back and it would feel like it was going slow. You know, like Like it's moving fast, but then I look back and wait, no, it's not. It's actually going slower than it is. And in general, I don't know, since I was little, my grandpa used to always tell me that time speeds up for our brains as we get older. And the way he kind of explained that to me, and I was pretty young and I really grasped it, was when you're 1 day old, 1 day is an entire lifetime. And when you're 1 year old, 1 year is an entire lifetime, until you get to, you know, he was like 80 as he's telling me this, where a year doesn't mean anything to him. It goes by like it was nothing. And I kind of, and I got that, like, I was kind of like, yeah, the more time you have to compare things to, the smaller things are going to seem as far as time goes. And I have generally observed that, but, you know, like a year goes by a lot faster for me in retrospect now, but that doesn't mean, like, when I look back, a year feels like it went by quick. My youngest son is only a year and a half old. You know, I mean, that just happened like that. But if you ask me at any point in time, the weeks can feel like they go on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't
go ahead, Travis.
Well, my response is going to be long. So if you had something to say, pop in before I start blabbing for
I was just going to say, I don't even know what day of the week it is usually anymore.
You're winning.
Yeah.
There's a line in a song by the band Gong, 70s psychedelic band, where it's two guys kind of singing back and forth. And one of them says, "Do you have the time?" The other one says, "No." And the first guy says, "Better off."
Yeah.
Well, in my world right now, I'm bifurcated. I mentioned when I sent the email that I'm kind of, or I may have mentioned this to you, Adam, I'm just emotionally raw because, so time for me, right now, my kids live in this world that I'm not really as actively a part of because I'm separated and moving towards divorcing my wife. And it's the hardest thing that I've ever had to go through. And all these crises that are happening sort of on, you know, big levels. And then in my own personal life, things are sort of like falling apart. And so, my kids are the most important thing, and trying to show them that, you know, it's this important to me to follow my calling, and that my calling, so put me at odds with my partner of, you know, we've been together for 24 years and married for 19. And so I'm really fucked up.
You guys went to Missoula together, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We moved here in 2000 and met like in 98. So, I mean, this is just, it's awful. And I'm really not trying to, I don't want to start crying, but it's important. Like, I mean, my kids have been seeing me cry and their mother cry, and, you know, I want my kids to tap into emotional literacy, because part of what I'm going through is a dad that is an emotional retard. I don't want to tell parts of my wife's story. That's not my story to tell, but, you know, the real consequences of not being checked in with your inner emotional world, is really just so damaging. And to have like maybe material stuff be that surrogate, it's like, oh yeah, you were provided for, you know, materially. Is that everything in a person's life, or does that create holes that you then go and try and fill with drugs? Or I used to go to Best Buy and buy new CDs. I was a retail. I did retail therapy before I started self-medicating with Boda Box wine. So when I stopped drinking and really invested some resources, that when my partner realized sort of what I had done to get this documentary made, which, go to enginsmissoula.com to see part of what I did that, you know, compromised my relationship. But in following my calling, it's for my family. We do not live in a town that is safe. When you actually scratch beneath the surface, the PR surface for the tourists and for the college kids and all the Californians that are moving here to make housing so goddamn impossible for everyone that actually is a regular person. My little girl's 6. My oldest is 13. And my oldest is going to start driving. I used to go to have the keg parties when I was in Midwest suburbia. We'd go drive out to some farmer land and have a keg, right? Now my kids might have some like vape hit of something that was laced with fentanyl and they might die. Or if they go just west of where I live, where my house is, or I no longer live at, that's where Johnny was shot, you know, just a couple miles down in the woods. And so it's kind of like, I don't understand how people can just twiddle their thumbs at this point. 2 years ago, I realized this was a war against humanity, waged by a small percentage of fucking psychopaths. And if you don't start doing something now, all right, you know, and I had the means to have some kind of impact locally, and I still have the means. I'm a very privileged white guy. I use all that privilege and all that white guidance to just show up places that people don't want me. And I'm going to continue exposing what I can about what's going on in this town, until I am not breathing, and I'm not afraid of death. I certainly don't seek it out. But when you start losing that fear, and you start seeing what it means to actually live, you don't go back to that. You know, man, that's a question. That's a long answer to the question that was, I think about time.
Yeah.
So for me, to go back to that, the Rebecca Barsotti missing person case, and all the synchronicities that are happening with me on a daily basis now, I live weeks and hours. I mean, it's like there's so much going on that I don't even know this time tomorrow what I might understand. To give you some context, I was in a VRBO for a couple days last week because there's a hitman that I think knows where my art studio is. And the hitman was actually on a radio program in like North Dakota talking about how he was contracted by Rebecca Barsotti's estranged husband to kill Rebecca's family. And this guy hasn't been arrested yet. He's got audio files that corroborates his claims that he's making publicly. And like, I'm telling you, man, I don't even understand some of the crazy shit that seems to be happening around some of this stuff. But I don't want to be taken out by a hitman. And I would like law enforcement to do their job and actually, you know, I don't know, search for missing people. But some of the stuff that I've been exposing in the last couple of weeks, it's so mind blowing. You know, just part of it is Rebecca Barsotti. She went missing, right? July 20th is when she's alleged to have gone missing. She is suspected to have a river accident in the Clark Fork River. So kind of west of Missoula and Alberton, there's a turnoff from Interstate 90. You can turn off the highway, right? And you can park and you can actually go down and there's some river access. And so the story goes. Rebecca was taking her dog out there and her dog got into a problem and she went to save her dog. And then they both drowned. The dog showed up 10 days later, dead downriver. And she just maybe has shown up. They haven't identified the body, you know, 10 days ago. And the most amazing thing that came out in the last couple of weeks is sonar images that were submitted to the Missoula County Sheriff's Department, to people like Captain Bill Burt, who's since retired and now trying to be Justice of the Peace. These images show what looks to be a body. And they were submitted to authorities. And the authorities, what do? They sent the private sector search and rescue packing, said, bye-bye, we don't need you anymore. And that evidence was that those images were suppressed. They were basically not available to the family until the family last March hired the same search and rescue to come back and search, right? And because they paid on their own dime for the search and rescue to come back, they got access to this report and they got the images that they were never supposed to get. These images seem to show a body and it seems to show that members of law enforcement knew and they hid that information. I mean, it's getting so crazy out here. That part, the Rebecca Barsotti missing person case feels more and more like a David Lynch movie. I mean, this is Twin Peaks style stuff out here, which makes sense since David Lynch was, you know, born at St. Pat's in Missoula, January 20th, I think 1946, right in the middle of the Babylon workings. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad to say, Travis, but I think as long as you're putting your faith into local law enforcement, I think the more and more you're just going to get frustrated. And you just gotta, I don't want you to go insane and I don't want you to get fucking murdered. I don't want you to become a TI, you know. It's just the longer you stare into the abyss, and I understand staring into the abyss because I do it all day, every day, but
yeah,
you gotta be able to take a step back and avert your gaze every once in a while. And I don't know. I really identify with the whole materialism thing and trying to fill these gaps and these holes. And especially those gaps, like really, really appear once you you quit the drinking and the drugs and all that stuff, and you try to fill it. And you know, oh, yeah. I thank God I was lucky enough to be able to early on fill it with AA, which I don't do anymore. But it really helped me out when I first did it. And I think more than ever, we're in a serious spiritual war. And when Buck Johnson came on our show and said what kind of got him thinking about this was, he's seeing evil spirits. That's what he's chalking it up to. And I can't disagree with that at all. I think, you know, your work with homeless people and seeing what's going on. And I don't, you know, see it very much anymore. And then I go into Portland for the night or to Vancouver, Washington, even like, and it's just, it's once you take yourself out of a situation where that homelessness and despair and just inhumanity is not a part of your daily life, when you go and you see it, it's astonishing, like how crazy it is that that's the norm. You know, Emily tells me stories about just driving around, and like sometimes she has to go downtown to go to the chiropractor or something, and just what she sees on a daily basis, and like how it's like, she's like some day, the other day, she was just waiting at a stoplight, you know, around a tent city. And like some guy like came up to her window and like started yelling that he was going to kill her. And she told me about it. I'm like, Jesus, man, I don't want to hear that my wife's having to deal with this. And it's just like, you think, oh, it's just a crazy home. But it really messed her up and like made it hard for her to sleep. She had bad dreams, and like the next day was ruined from it. And it's just, you know, even if you're not a homeless person, being in that kind of environment all the time, it just is not what we're supposed to see. And like, when you really get down and think about, like, you hear these stories of people that like children who've grown up on a farm or something, and then they go to New York City for the first time and they see a homeless person on the street that's like passed out dying pretty much, and people are just stepping over them, and they stop and like ask the person if they're okay and call 911, you know. And that's like, that's looked at as crazy.
Yeah.
But kind of in a long way where I'm going with this is, Emily's been telling me she's seeing it really ramp up right now. And I think I relate it back to when there was all those fires up and down the West Coast. I think they can activate and deactivate all these people. What do you guys think about that?
Okay, I got to tell you what I experienced with someone a couple days ago, walking in downtown Missoula, Montana, because part of me opening up in a spiritual way, the way that I'm starting to think about how adversarial forces manifest is through the idea of Wendigo or Wetiko. So that sort of Native American concept of the mind parasite.
Yeah. THC did a great episode on it.
Paul Levy, or I think is the guy. I'll keep on looking at my library, but that concept has been really important for me in my understanding of some of this stuff, because I don't want to get too much into the person that I am learning a lot spiritually from. It's just because it's all fraught with, you know, complications, personal complications. But this person is very spiritually open in ways that, just amazing what I've been learning. And we were walking, and she reacted like she was being hit with something. She was to my right. Okay. There was a homeless man passed out by the Ox. You like the Ox. This is right by the Ox, Adam.
Yeah. Where I went to breakfast. Yeah.
Yeah. This is right by the Ox. Right. So one of the kind of gritty, real places that you thankfully found in Missoula to patronize. Yeah. Right. And so we were walking down the sidewalk, and this was just so insane. All right. She reacts as Lord Jesus, doesn't even remember saying that. And this guy opens his eyes. He was passed out. He opens his eyes and says something. And like, we got out of there. But it was an absolute supernatural spiritual situation. And You know, you might not even believe in saying Jesus out loud, but that might be some mojo to think about in these times, because it is happening, and it is real. It really is real. And if I have a big criticism of the broad Christian faith in a lot of ways, it's made it sort of too boring and milquetoast to sit in like some of these, you know, church services, and you didn't give the more emphasis to Jesus casting spirits out of swine and the fact that you make yourself vulnerable. I mean, a lot of this, I also think about Baphomet and Tracy Twyman. I mean, that still is in the back of my mind in a lot of ways, because Baphomet is such a contractual entity, and we enter into contracts whether we sort of know it or not in all these little small ways. Whether you give permission in certain ways to things, it's, you know, and if meth lowers your defenses for entity walk-in kind of stuff, I am increasingly open to all manner of what fuckery might be afoot in what they're trying to do to gaslight all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's so true. Like, Adam, as you were talking about Emily's interaction there, like, it really resonated with me of that. Sometimes these things can really get in my head. And I kind of pride myself. I don't know if I really pride myself on it, but I typically, like, other people don't usually get in my head unless I let them. And when I say that, I just mean, you know, if someone says something to me, if I don't care for it, I forget about it. And if I do care for it, I can think about it as long as I want, you know. But like, I had this interaction with a homeless gal, I don't know, a month ago or so, where I have a routine. I work in a downtown setting. And of course, as the weather gets better, the homeless start coming out, and it gets more and more.
Oh yeah.
They're not typically right outside my place of work, but I have as I leave, it's kind of a routine of I walk out, I park in the same spot right outside the door. And there was someone standing off to the side, and I walked past them, and I could hear them talking, and I assumed that it was not a homeless person from the way they were talking. I thought it was the person standing there on their phone or something. And I went straight to my car on the passenger side, and I put some stuff on the seat. This routine I do every day. I put some stuff on the seat, and then I walk around the other side. And as I did that this time, I heard this person talking, and they were asking, "Where are you at? Where are you at? Just tell me where you're at." And as I closed that door and I left it unlocked, and I walked around with my key to unlock the other side of my 2001 Honda. It doesn't have the automatic locks. I got to use the key twice to get in on two sides. And as I walked, and I could see this person was like approaching me asking, "Where are you at?" And I just kind of ignored her. But before I got my key in, she opened my passenger side of my car, got in there, started rifling through my stuff. It's just a bunch of tapes. It was particularly dirty. I cleaned it up the next day because no one had ridden in my car for a while. So I had a bunch of tapes laying out and like just garbage and crap. It was looking kind of shabby in there. And I, you know, didn't really notice. But before I opened the door, you know, I came around I was going, "Hey, get out of there. What are you doing? Get out of there." And she didn't take anything. She got out and she said, "Well, what are you doing in there?" And I said, "Well, it's my car, you know, so please, you know, please respect my property." And she says, "Is it?" And she just kept asking, she kept saying, "I don't think it's your car. You don't, this isn't yours. You have no right to it." And I was just kind of just, you know, it was the end of a long day. And, you know, I got in my car and left, and I didn't stop thinking about this interaction for like 2 days, because I couldn't, like, I felt I was kind of mean to her. You know, I was telling her to get out of here.
Chad's freezing. I was almost thinking if that was like a sovereign citizen kind of response, you know, she was,
almost immediately as Chad, I started driving,
Chad, hold up for a second. You froze up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you were thinking about, you were kind of mean to her. That's where you cut off.
Yeah. I was kind of mean to her, and she said the thing she said, and then I started driving, and almost immediately I started thinking from the point of view of like, well, should I have asked her if she needed a ride or she needed anything? Should I have been more, you know, kind to her? And, you know, which isn't typically my way of reacting to something like that. But, you know, I was, you know, just kind of a self-reflection thing. But then I kept thinking about what she was saying. And I was like, well, should I have schooled her? Should I have said, no, I don't own this car because I'm a member of the corporation that's known as the United States of America. And at best, I'm renting this. You know, I mean, I could have gone that direction. I don't know. Yeah. It was like one of these things where I kept thinking about it. I got home, I greeted my family. And within 5 minutes, it was like, I had to tell my wife about this. And then that night when I was doing my prayers, I prayed for a better idea of what I should be doing, but you know, like nothing really came of it, but I kept replaying that scenario. And that's not something that usually happens to me. And it was so bizarre.
Well, I mean, that weirds me out. Those questions, those probing questions. And then I can see how that would stick with you. And anything that like sticks with me now, I really investigate from as many different angles as I can. And this person that I've been learning from, the way that she interprets dreams and gets kind of warnings in certain ways, the way they then seem to quickly manifest is allowing me to understand more about how some of these things that stick with you might be. I mean, there's something there for you. You just haven't tracked it down quite yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, eventually it was like 2 days and, you know, a solid like 6 hours. And then, you know, it kind of slowed down and quit being so much with me. By 2 days later, you know, I haven't really thought about it again until Adam was talking about Emily's interaction. I was going, oh yeah, yeah. Cause that's sort of what happened with me, with the way it got into my head with that.
Yeah. I warn people, you know, just from my years working at the Poverello Center, I don't encourage people to be too kind. And I mean, I don't want people to be mean, right? But I know so many of the sort of scams and schemes and true mental health issues and drug-related psychosis going on that, you know, it's just not necessarily worth it right now in my mind to engage too much in an altruistic way. It might be well-intentioned, but you're really opening yourself up to all manner of stuff. I mean, and this comes from someone where I have had to do a lot of like thinking about just how trauma does function and work. You know, I was attacked physically by a guy on meth by the Union Gospel Mission, and I had a couple knives pulled on me. And I had a crazy woman and her developmentally delayed, I think it was her daughter, like basically send me all these letters claiming that I had assaulted her and that I was going to go to jail. And that Chuck Norris was my dad and she was my mom, and that my kids were her grandkids. And she used to send the letters to where I worked at the POV, but this is years ago. And then she found my home address where I lived at the time. And the letters started coming to my home. And I'm just like, okay, this is no longer something that I can just, you know, play off.
That's almost getting into TI territory. And that's my fear for you, Travis. Like, I don't want that to happen to you, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, to some degree that's already baked into the cake in some ways. Like at this point I'm in subpoena land. I mean, there's stuff that I know that I could be subpoenaed. I mean, I kind of passed the point of being able to get out of some of this stuff a while back. And that's not to sound too fatalistic or ominous. You know, I really see miracles every day in my life. And every day I don't drink. I mean, honestly, that's a miracle. And I have a whole plan for Legos. I wrote in my notes, I have Legos written really large. I'm like, okay, I've got to talk about Legos because
I love Legos, dude. I can't wait. So I can't wait to have kids so I can go get Legos again. I had a stepson for a long time and I used to do Legos with him all the time, and it would just divert into me just building everything, him handing me stuff.
It is therapy. It's the best. Like the plans I have, I'm going to build a huge Lego installation at hopefully if the art center I have a studio at, if they allow me to move forward with this idea. I have like a business proposal and everything that I submitted to them. But it's going to be really interesting because, Legos are expensive, you know, but, they retain value. And I want to have this Lego library where there's a membership. I shouldn't say too much because then people might steal my idea, but, there's a lot of different ways you can look at monetizing some of this stuff. And I guess maybe I don't think enough about monetizing. Maybe I should have more sympathy for the shysters that want to be gatekeepers to the Rockfin world and all the places in which content gets monetized. But I want to stick local and play with Legos. And if I can find a way to get money,
most of those people are making money off that station anyway. So there's no
Rockfin's not. I'm paying $9.99 for the content. Although I'm trying to second guess that right now.
That's all going to Jimmy Dore and a couple other people. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of sad that Monica Perez and Brad Binkley aren't doing the full duo Drive Time News Blast, but I respect how people have to change. I dropped my podcast. I know Dean kind of had to adjust his stuff. I mean, I was working in a warehouse for the last couple of months, you know, actually doing real honest physical labor, getting muscles. Good. And so however people have to hustle, I try not to be too critical on that because, we'll have the fiat currency collapse here soon. I'm actually playing with the Lego right now. If you can see,
this is Captain Jack Sparrow.
Good one.
Well, this actually looks a lot like, David Barsotti. David Barsotti claims to be a real like Merc type veteran, and David Barsotti actually wears an eye patch. And I got this Lego figure while I was traveling back to Kansas City. And the fact it looks just like him is a Lego synchronicity. Yeah. but yeah, no, the world's kind of crazy and everyone has to do what they can to sort of navigate that. And you should not do anything to open yourself unnecessarily to demonic possession. Cause that's a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think now more than ever, I believe that there are demonic spirits all amongst us. And I think, I think it's by design. I think these horrible, horrible substances that are being flooded into all these cities are, you know, lower people's consciousness and vibrations and everything. Yeah. And make it easy for that stuff to just come in. And I think that's happening. I really think that there's a way that I want to find out how it's done. I never will, but I think there's these ways that people, like a big group of people, can be massively activated. And I think we're seeing it right now.
I think that is, I think you're spot on there, Adam. I mean, I think that we saw that in 2020, you know, we saw a whole lot of people overnight be activated to support a narrative. And we saw it. And then we saw that same activation end and another one start on a dime with Ukraine, you know? And the next one, you know, I could list three or four things that I think it could be, but I think that these activations, I mean, I think activation is a good way to put it. It's like mass instead of targeted individual, it's like a mass targeting kind of concept.
Yeah.
And a lot of this, you know, the synchronicity stuff, I look at synchronicity as a type of language outside of time. So like a non-temporal, sort of non-local language. Like one of the things I like to think about is Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar in the black hole playing around with the dust, you know, like there's something that's just outside of time. It could be our future selves, time traveling. It could be interdimensional stuff happening. Donnie Darko is one of my favorite like movies. And so the idea of a tangent rip sort of resonates with me in a lot of ways. And
what about CERN? What's going on with CERN?
See, that's kicking up again. And I really think that this occultist aspect of playing with time is something that the synchronicity that I'm working on. So that, I mean, the biggest synchronicity, and I'm trying to think of how I can casually talk about it. So in my mind, and I haven't gotten clearance yet to put the image out there, but there's an image, and the image in my mind is going to be Selma Hayek, because this image exists, Selma Hayek, with a person that people are going to look at the person and it's going to be like, who is this? And the caption is going to be Selma pictured with God. And the stuff that's going on with what my synchronicity with January 3rd, 2020, what that has opened up, in a particular movie that was made by a guy, who used, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck as angels. Maybe I'll just leave it at that. There's a synchronicity in that film that is so freaking mind blowing that it makes me think the grand narrative control that's been happening for thousands of years, Jesus is pissed off, I think, and there is a huge effort to reorder at an atomic level what we're experiencing, so that the revelation will eventually happen and this long-term gaslighting that's been thousands of years in the making finally gets fixed.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to our most recent Emmanuel Kingman episode, we're in the time of Lucifer rising from the depths of hell as well, you know? So.
Well, and so, and I'll mention then, going to church today, right? That's perfect because, one of the challenges I'm having is just not being with my kids enough, but, you know, knowing they know I love them. I tell them that all the time and I can still see them and check in with them. And, you know, there's just more distance than I've ever been used to, but, and so normally I'd be watching Stranger Things with them, but I didn't get a chance to. I know they binge watched like the first five episodes, but I was sitting in church today and the pastor was talking about the upside down kingdom. And he kept on saying upside down. Uh-huh. And I just like, and this is one of the churches that was very, put bullshit on your face and get your stabby stab. And so I mean, I stopped going there for a while, but now that, you know, things change weirdly, I felt that I needed to be there today. And so I'm hearing the pastor say upside down over and over again, and I'm looking at my kids, and I know that they're just thinking Stranger Things. Also, they're thinking, I don't want to be here. Get me to the donuts in the sanctuary.
Yeah, so the donuts and the Tang.
Yeah, yeah. So, but after the sermon and after church was over, I went up to the pastor and I said, you know, you mentioned upside down, and I know my kids were not thinking about the kingdom of Christ. They were thinking about Stranger Things. And I'm like, from my perspective, because you didn't say that, like, you were thinking about Stranger Things. And he's like, well, I was. I'm like, well, but you didn't say that. And so I'm like, this idea, like the colonization of that term has already happened. Like, you can't come in as a pastor and mention upside down now, because that term is already getting my kids thinking about the Montauk rebranding that is Stranger Things. Right. And so it's like Christians in so many ways have lost any kind of sophistication in talking about the supernatural. That a lot of people have a lot more interest in the occult and Crowley and all that stuff, because it feels more exciting and real. And I had this experience with, I go to Liquid Planet a lot. That's where I had a Higher Side Chat meetup, and I met a really cool person in real life, because that's something that people should do, meet people in real life and get some allies in meet space. But I went to this coffee shop, and it's funny because, you know, these cashiers at like the Good Food Store, which is like the granola place, that, and they keep on asking questions like, how are you doing? How is your day? And I keep on responding in way too honest ways that they just, you know, sometimes get uncomfortable with. And yeah. So a lot of the cashiers, I think, have stopped asking me that question. But this is a new person. She asked me, and I'm like, oh, what crisis do you want to hear about? She's like, well, I have a crisis too. And I'm like, well, you tell me yours. And she said something about a religious member of her family, like coming down on her real strong. And then I said something about like synchronicities, but like that I was kind of a believer now, but I wasn't comfortable with just saying Jesus and Christ and, you know, yada, yada. And it's interesting because like she actually listened to what I said, but if I came at it, you know, dressed not all kick ass in black and with my cool rings and, you know, looking like some Bible thumper, you know, she would not be as open to the good news that I then started telling her about the synchronicity. And there's a lot of people in Missoula that have heard the full synchronicity and they understand where to watch the film and what's actually going on. And I love it when people receive the good news, because I'm just like, you know, this is a magical place and there's a power that is reasserting itself right now, because there's that dark assertion of whatever is rising up that, you know, these occultist necromancer motherfuckers have been playing around with for eons. And so I'm choosing light. You know, I don't drink alcohol because of Lego miracles in my life. And fuck fear, you know, it's bullshit. I'm not going to give into that. I'm living my life every day the way I choose to.
Yeah. What you just described with the cashier is called, attraction rather than promotion. They talk about it in AA all the time.
Oh, but yeah. Yeah.
It discourages, okay, you know, being a Bible thumper, because nobody wants, nobody gets converted that way, you know?
Nope.
It'd be interesting to see what kind of conversion rate a Mormon has on a mission. if they recorded every person they talked to on their, how long is a mission? Six months?
That's, oh man, how, that's a long time to go be converting.
And then talk, if they recorded every person that they talked to, how many of them became Mormons?
Yeah, I bet it's very, very few.
Yeah.
I bet that some people, if it's 6 months, I bet some people do 6 months of going door to door. I don't know how many houses they would hit in a day, but they can do that and maybe not convert one person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be rough, but it probably makes them good salesmen later in life. You know,
it also would be something they probably don't have a follow-up for, like, at all, you know, like, I mean, like, you would, they would drop, I mean, like, cause I've talked to Mormons on that level. I've known Mormons personally as well, but I mean, I've talked to door to door Mormons as well. And all they do is kind of drop some literature off and, you know, they just want to tell you about it. They're not, they don't say, call me or here's my card, you know, like, let me try to bring you into the yeah, church.
There's no, what's it called? Model of, oh shit. What's the term when commission, you don't get commission.
Oh yeah. It's, you're not, that's how you get into heaven. You know, you got to have enough, get enough conversions to get in or something.
Yeah.
Got to have proof. Prove it.
Okay. Well, another ask, oh, no, go ahead.
Have you, I wanted to ask you, what sort of effect is the series Yellowstone having on Montana? Oh. We just binged the whole thing. I didn't like, it was okay. Emily,
first for me, what exactly is it a documentary show or is it like a,
no, it's a Yellowstone is a, four, it's got four seasons. It's still ongoing. A fifth season's coming out in November. It's about, this guy, John Dutton, who has like this generational huge ranch, outside of Bozeman, Montana, close to Yellowstone National Park, I'd imagine. And, it's modern day, and it has a couple like concurrent stories going on. There's all the ranch hands, what they're doing. Okay. And then all,
but the, it's like, all actors in fiction.
Yeah. It's Kevin Costner.
Okay. Yep. And it just, oh, no kidding.
It just deals with, I guess is what you'd call gentrification into Montana.
Yep.
Development. Okay. How that, like, this guy who has this big, generational ranch that was originally taken from the Indians, the Indian tribe that's got the reservation nearby, who are also trying to develop but save the land kind of as well. And then like Californians coming in and building like Park City, Utah there.
Yep. Oh man. Okay. Yellowstone is a narrative that is permeating so much of what I am doing. I used Yellowstone as a synchronistic tool to get Michael Wan, to get an interview with him. So, and the way that I used it is because now that you've watched it, you're familiar with like the first or second episode of water. Okay, the importance of water. And so
they blow up a stream, yeah, or like the river, and divert it so that this development can't have water rights or whatever, yeah, to build.
I love that. And the way that I use that specific thing. So I had been looking into, well, this is, we talked a little bit about this, I think. I don't want to say the same thing over again, but I've been looking into sort of water and how water is part of development. So for example, Nick Chakota here in Missoula was going to develop this big performing arts center next to the Clark Fork River. That project kind of went bust, but then I was also looking into Spokane because that's where I was born, and the World's Fair, and how they use the World's Fair to clean up the river and to develop the riverfront area in Spokane back in, I think, 73 or 74. But in Missoula, the Clark Fork goes through town, river runs through it, right? Pretty, mm-hmm, pretty famous for people that are familiar with that book.
It's a great movie. I just watched it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And the church that I was at this morning is First Pres. And that's the church that actually is in that movie. So yeah, First Presbyterian. Yeah.
Yeah. The father, Tom Skerritt. Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting because I had become aware that the Clark Fork River had, part of the river had moved at some point, and I wasn't sure when. So it used to go right up by the Wilma, And the Wilma is that theater right by on the Higgins Bridge, which the wokists have now named it some unpronounceable Native American word because they're fucking idiots. But but the Wilma used to have this the river, the Clark Fork went right next to it. And I was looking into something called Chapel of the Dove. So Chapel of the Dove is this weird place in the Wilma that people used to watch movies and get married. It's kind of creepy. The guy that owned the Wilma at the time, Edward Sharp, nothing to do with the musician, but Edward Sharp, he raised this dove that fell out of the Higgins Bridge as a little baby dove. And this dove like grew up and like drank sips of highball martinis and would play this bell as this eccentric guy would play the piano. And so I realized the river had been pretty close because this homeless guy that I interviewed for my podcast used to actually be in the elevator. I think this is why I was talking to you about it, Adam, because the elevator was a manual operated elevator. It was one of the last ones this like west of the Mississippi or something. This is what the homeless guy was telling me. But he was telling me that he remembered Edward Sharp telling him stories of throwing champagne bottles off of like the ninth floor and it going into the river. And so I'm like, wow, the river was that close. And it turns out I finally found out when it changed. The last time the Higgins Bridge was renovated, they used that opportunity to fill in the side channel and then create Karis Park. And I'm looking into this now because they're doing more development, spending more gentrification, public dollars to make a bunch of bullshit that they didn't need to make. And I'm very pissed off. They destroyed a hill my kids used to roll down. And so the memories are now just in our minds because these fuckers just destroy everything that's sacred. And so it's just interesting. And I used that to talk to Michael Wan because he was doing all that Susquehanna River stuff and was looking into Kevin Costner and all these weird synchronicities with Field of Dreams and really fascinating stuff. And so I used that. I'm like, hey, I see you're Kevin Costner and I raise you a Yellowstone Kevin Costner. And I told him because that scene where the billionaire developer was stopped because they went far enough upstream, blew up the spot where it was coming out and like diverted it away from this guy's ability to use it on his property. So water and the movement of water, the power to change the course of rivers, that stuff is pretty fascinating. And so to answer your question, yes, the Yellowstone show is very impactful for people like me in Montana.
Yeah. Have you gotten through the whole series yet?
I haven't watched the season 4 because I'm hiding from Hitman and trying to figure out how this David Lynch movie for me ends.
Okay. Well, I think we've done enough for the day.
Chad,
do you have any final thoughts or words or questions?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this has been a fascinating conversation though, all the way through. I'm always curious what's going on over there with you. I follow you on Twitter, of course. And that
I know. Thank you for retweeting stuff. I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Cause yeah, you put out your blog on there and that draws me into there and it's always a fascinating read. And it's something I like pushing out to other people. Like, I think, like I said before earlier today, you know, I mean, we need more boots on the ground, people talking about what's happening in their areas. You bring up Michael Wan with that too. Michael Wan does such a great job of promoting that people come up with or understand their own story for their own area. And
I love that guy. I've never reached out to him. Maybe we should.
I have, and he showed interest in coming on once, but then it went radio silent after two or three interactions.
Yeah, well, there's some weird stuff going on with him and his concern on some electronic media stuff. And so I know he consciously pulled back from doing some stuff. And so that might be a bit of a challenge. But thank you for mentioning the writing. I wanted to plug really quickly, like ZoomCron is my blog. So www.zoomcron, that's ZoomCron.com. I also have a Substack. And one of the things I wanted to try and mention quickly is that I wrote this fiction starting 2015, 2016. And then scenes sort of coming real in my life and it's kind of crazy, but I have transitioned to my COVID journal. So I kept a pretty good journal 2 years ago and holy cow, as I'm reading stuff, we talk about time. We have forgotten some of the details and how crazy things were. And just reading my journal has been really interesting. And so I'm going to be putting more of that out and continuing doing writing. I want to get my podcast going again to get interviews happening.
But I'd love to help you, man, because you had that thing before and it was impossible to find. I'd love to help you get it out there, get it on all the stuff the right way so that people can actually find you and listen to you. And,
I'm terrible at promoting shit. I know,
but I'm not the best either, but I can at least help you get it on iTunes and Spotify and shit. So
yes, I would love any help I can get for sure.
Yeah. But,
hey, you know, just real quick with your, talking about your podcast, I want to tell you every once in a while, I get your theme song stuck in my head. it just pops in there and I it's just great.
Oh, thank you.
How long does it take you to get to Sandpoint, Idaho?
Oh, that's a good question. 2-3 hours maybe.
How about you, Chud?
It's pretty far, but we could do it.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I might head up there in July. I'll let you guys know.
Yeah,
that would be fun. Because one of the things I would love to connect with Owen Benjamin and talk with him. Northern Idaho, I want to explore that area more. Rathdrum is a little town in Idaho that I visited a couple of years ago. And I think regionally, we just need to do more to get like face-to-face opportunities to meet people. So, I mean, I would love to do stuff like that. That would be a lot of fun.
Hey, I just went to a bear meetup last night.
Oh, how was it, man?
It was great. Yeah. Turned out there were some Deborah Gets Red Pill fans there.
Are you serious?
who I already knew, but didn't know they were going to be there.
I went to one once and didn't have a great time. So.
Is that Owen's thing? Bear meetups?
Yeah, Bear Taria.
Oh, that's right.
This was great. Yeah. It was three families, and we all had kids, and we hung out and had a fire, and I was out way past my bedtime, but it was absolutely worth it, and it was great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a fantastic chat, guys. We went all over the place and back, and I'm glad we got to do it, and yeah, I hope you're doing okay, Travis. Anytime that you need to talk or anything like that, you let us know, and we'll help you get through the rough patch. And
I may take you up on that. The amount of anytime. People that like
I'm don't serious.
Think yeah, nuts. Both on a personal level, or if you want to get things out and be on the podcast, like that's we're here.
Yeah. Well, this has been so much fun, guys. I love talking to you, and it's been a real pleasure for your. Being receivers of the good news, you know, like I don't understand. Sometimes people want to like not see some of the positives that really are still happening. And, you know, I'm white pilled all the way. I think there's some really amazing stuff happening. So any chance I get to kind of share my excitement over this stuff, even though it can be dark feeling at times, like, thank you for giving me this opportunity. Your guys' stuff is awesome. And your new podcast, Chud, I've been enjoying landing what you guys are putting out. That's good stuff.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for checking it out. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll have to do this again soon.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And thank the two of you. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
I don't want to see him kissing goblins, sucking us with goblins, and appreciating goblins. I don't want to see him kissing goblins, and appreciating goblins. Dump it, charging into a goblin's nest, some goblin vomit, slopping blood on him, especially up to his ankles. Trump charging into a goblin's nest, some goblin vomit, slopping. I'm not expecting him to not get dirty. Seeing goblins, appreciating goblins, give us with goblins. I just want to catch him in bed with a goblin.